We all love the Son and the Sin and the Servant. It can provide us with calm and peaceful retreat. It's a place where relationships are formed, memories are shared, and adventures are lived out. But beneath the surface lies a hidden danger. It begins with a subtle tug, a pull in the wrong direction. A strong flow of water that takes us away from the shore and out to sea. Before we realize what's happening, we are out of control at the mercy of the ocean's current. So, beware of the signs, stay alert, and when the pull comes, resist.
All right, so we are into week two in a sermon series on called Riptide. And so we can catch you up real quick if you weren't with us last week. We're looking at this as sort of a metaphor, and most of us have been to the ocean, and you know what a riptide or rip current, undertow, all that is, right? You've been warned about that because they can really be dangerous. We think when we go to the ocean that the real danger are things like jellyfish and sharks and that stuff, but they say that 80% of all of the rescues that lifeguards do in the ocean have to do with people that have been caught in an undercurrent, who have been caught in a rip current. And you know, I think, we already planned on this sermon series, I promise you before, the news came out that there were some very unfortunate drownings that happened down in, I think, Panama City in the last couple of weeks because of rip currents. They can, as we examined last week, the most dangerous ones are ones that you don't even know that you're in. It usually is this subtle thing. You're out there playing, and if you don't know what to look for, and you don't know that there's any danger, before you know it, you can be pulled out from shore to a place where you can't touch bottom anymore. And the water is going out from the shore, they say, about 5 miles an hour, which is faster than a human being can swim. And so it can be very, very, very life-threatening if we're not aware and we don't know what signs to look for. That is the undertowed there. I'm not going to use that illustration, but ask me about it later. It's funny. World of Color, funny about it. So it's, you sometimes don't know what to look for. And so, lots of times you can see a place where it actually looks like the waves aren't, and we can think, well, that's going to be a nice, safe place to swim, but actually those are the places where they are. And so people that are lifeguards and people who are taught are able to spot them and know where they are. So we're looking at this in parallel with a pretty iconic story from the Old Testament, the story of King David. We know King David for a lot of things, David and Goliath, maybe most famously, but almost up there is his great moral failure, his sin with Bathsheba. And lots of times we look at something like what happened to David, or look at someone else who got into a great sin or a moral failure, and we think it's like a shark attack, right? Bang! It just kind of hits all at once. But it's been my experience that usually people don't wake up in the morning and say, hey, you know what? I think I'm going to break my wedding vows today. I'm going to go sleep with another man's wife. You know, it's a lot more subtle than that, right? It's just this gradual pull over and over, you know? People don't wake up in the morning and say, you know what? I'm going to commit fraud. You know, I am going to cheat a bunch of people. I don't think most of the times that it's that abrupt, like a shark attack. It's more like this gentle pull, and at some point people you're supposed to be doing, you're more likely to be doing what you're not supposed to be doing. Right? It's pretty wise. You can write that down. You know, maybe make it into like a, you know, one of those little, what do you knit? You know, knit those little knit things you put in the kitchen or something like that. Anyway, when you're not doing what you're supposed to be doing, you're more likely to be doing what you're not supposed to be doing. And that was the case with David. And he sees Bathsheba. You know, he's up wandering on top of his roof and he sees her. But he couldn't just said, hey, that's lovely, and walked on. But no, he inquired about it and got deeper and deeper. And he starts going out into the undertow. And first thing you know, he, you know, is in a whole lot of trouble. And so what we talked about last week is before you even get into trouble like that is to be able to see the warning signs. And all of us have different kinds of triggers. There's some waters that for all of us, for everyone, they're not appropriate for swimming. They're unsafe waters. But having self-awareness and knowing what might be a trigger for you or for me or for someone, you know, it may be different from person to person. You know, maybe you're not a person who should ever, ever go on Amazon Prime. Maybe you're a person who should never, ever stop into a happy hour. Maybe that's not the same for someone else. You know, maybe it's not just one with you. It's two, it's three, and it's, you know, I don't think people, again, wake up in the morning and say, you know what I'm going to do today? I'm going to go out and get a DUI. You know, it's much, much more subtle because they did not heed the warning signs along the way. And so we kind of looked at, you know, when we're healthy and when what are hazardous conditions, and we're healthy, you know, like for David. David is healthy when he is doing what God called him to do, leading with integrity the way that he should be with his men and his army at the appropriate times. And he is not healthy. He's in hazardous conditions when he has stayed behind, when he is in bed with another man's wife, when he is, you know, one of the things about David that we read last week was, first of all, he was really tired, but he had also, just the prior chapters of that, had been very, very successful. Very, very ultra successful. And sometimes that's a warning sign for people. So knowing what your warning signs are, you know, when you're tired, when, you know, things have been going really, really good and you're kind of up, or maybe it's something else for you. And so, you know, before you know it, you can find yourselves out and you're not able to touch bottom. And so what is the natural human reaction there? You know, you're away from the shore. You know, it's pulling you away. What do you do?
Try to get back to shore.
You try to get back to shore. And you try to do it with your own strength. And you know, if you don't know better, you'll start swimming, you know, back against the current. You know, and you're drowning. And you don't know that you're drowning. You don't know what trouble you are in. And so, what have you been told in water safety about drowning people? Drowning people. They can pull you down. They can be very, very dangerous. And you know, I don't want to try to work this metaphor for every single thing that we talk about during this series. But there is this thing about that when someone is in a situation like David is, they're just trying to keep their own head above water, and they are looking for and grabbing people and doing dangerous things. And that's what we're going to see when we get into these next few verses right here. He has found out that Bathsheba is pregnant. Hopefully it'll come up. Okay? The woman conceived and sent word to David saying, I am pregnant. So David now, he cannot touch bottom. He is being pulled out, and he, in his own strength, starts trying to go back against the current. And so what's the first thing? He said, well, who's her husband again? Uriah the Hittite. If that guy could come home, I know he's out to war. If he could come home and spend the night with his wife, then, you know, it wouldn't be so obvious. There'd be some reason to think that I'm not the dad that he is. And so he tried to get that set up. And come on now, come on. Rachel, you need to do this for me. Here we go. So David sent this word to Joab. Joab is his commander. He says, send me Uriah the Hittite. And Joab sent him to David. And when Uriah came to him, David asked him how Joab was, how the soldiers were, and how the war was going. So David is pretending like he really cares about Testament with Jesus. And so he says, go to your house and wash your feet. It's like, you know, like we would say, hey, you know, you've been to war. Go home and kick back a little bit, you know, take a load off. And so Uriah left the palace, and a gift from the king was sent after him. And why it doesn't go on to say a gift of food, because other translations do. I don't know why the NIV leaves it out. That's what I'm using here. But a gift of food. And so he sends him home, you know, with the instructions, go home and wash your feet, you know, stay a while, you know, relax. And he sends him a great meal to sort of, you know, kind of make the setting right. But you see within Uriah this man of great character and integrity. Because this is what happened next. Go to the next slide, Rachel. I'm just going to let you do it for me. But Uriah slept at the entrance to the palace with all his master's servants and did not go down to his house. So he didn't make it home. He stopped instead with his servants. And so we kind of maybe can guess why. Well, let's go on to the next slide and we'll know for sure. David was told Uriah did not go home. So he asked Uriah, haven't you come from a military campaign? Why didn't you go home? Next slide. Uriah said to David, the ark and Israel and Judah are staying in tents, and my commander Joab and my Lord's men are camped in the open country. How could I go home to my house to eat and drink and make love to my wife? As surely as you live, I will not do such a thing. If my men are out there with their lives on the line, I'm going to be with them. And so he camped there with his men there. And we said last week, if you weren't here, he was within a small, sort of like the Navy SEALs of this ancient Israel. There's like a 30-man unit that he was a part of, Uriah was. And that should have been another warning sign to David. You know, you shouldn't mess with this guy, because Uriah and those around him were the people that were protecting the king. You know, they were the closest to the king. And so and they had come in, and he just had too much character. He said, my men can't do it. I'm not going to do it. What's good for them is good for me. So it goes on to the next slide. See what David does? David said, well, okay. Stay here one more day, and tomorrow I'll send you back. You know, so Uriah remained in Jerusalem that day and the next. And at David's invitation, he ate and drank with him, and David made him drunk. Here is the classic part of, you know, of over-serving. You know, your king, your leader, keeps on saying, have another glass of wine, have another glass of wine. What's he going to say? You know, he is, after all, the king, his commander, and a man that they all love and respect deeply. Don't ever lose sight of that. They loved and would follow David everywhere. David had been their leader. David had had tremendous, tremendous success. He had united the northern and southern kingdom. He had recaptured the Ark of the Covenant. All the stuff that David had, David was much, much respected. And so David says, have another glass of wine. He has another glass of wine. He became drunk. So David thinks, okay, that'll do it. He'll get drunk. He'll go home to Bathsheba. But what happens the next slide? But in the evening, Uriah went out to sleep on his mat among his master's servants. He did not go home. Still didn't go home. David's plan did not work. So next slide. In the morning, David wrote a letter to Joab and sent it with Uriah. In it, he wrote, put Uriah out in front where the fighting is fiercest. Then withdraw him from him so he will be struck down and die. And you can go to the next slide. And I'm just going to talk about what happens, because there's several verses here, and it gets into a lot of detail. And I invite you and would encourage you to read that. Because what you see in Joab and all these people is they didn't really seem to understand or quite get it, or at least I don't see that in the text, that David was essentially putting Uriah in a place to be killed. He was essentially murdering Uriah. Because they have so much respect for David, their king, their leader, that one who's conquered, that this is, I know this seems unorthodox, but this must be some strange battle. across their ministry credentials, one for a moral failure and one for bank fraud. They are both back pastoring churches already. Not Methodist churches, they've given their credentials up, but they've started churches. And I'm sure, and I'm trying not to be done home. I really am. And I am not saying that anybody, God can make a new creation. God can start things. It just seems a little quick and a little dangerous and a little bit too soon. Not that it couldn't happen someday. Not that that disqualifies them forever. But it just seems a little quick. It seems a little bit desperate. And I'm sure they seem very capable because I've seen folks just like them, and I know that you, it manifests itself in different ways. So let's see what happens. You know, Joab is really upset because this thing has happened this way. And so David told this to the messenger after the messenger has given him the news about the death of Uriah. He says, say this to Joab. Don't let this upset you. The sword devours one as well as the other. Press the attack against the city and destroy it. Say this to encourage Joab next time. When Uriah's wife heard that her husband was dead, she mourned for him. Next slide. After the time of mourning was over, David had her brought to his house, and she became his wife and bore him a son. But the thing David had done displeased the Lord. So David is seemingly comforting his general there. He seemingly is completely in control, but yet he is way, way underwater. And like a desperate drowning man, he is reaching out to grab folks. A drowning man is a very dangerous man. Now, this is a great, great story of restoration. It truly is. And we see it next week, and then there's a beautiful, the fourth week of this sermon series, I'm going to teach on this beautiful psalm where David prays, create in me a clean heart, O God. You may know that psalm. So the story ends well. But I want to, many of y'all know I went last month to a conference up in New York called Images and Voices of Hope. And it was all about restorative storytelling. And one thing that I've learned, like hammered into me, is that we have a tendency to wrap things up very quickly and put a little pretty bow on it and say, here it is. And we preachers to do that in a 20-minute sermon. So I don't want to tell you that life is not complicated. This is a mess, and it is hurting a lot of people. And that is a lot of stories that are ongoing out there. And sometimes we don't know how to help. Our initial response, just like the person's response, is to try to swim back to shore. Sometimes our initial response is to jump in and rescue and swim out there and try to help them, right? And sometimes that's the worst thing that we could do, because we're just going to end up getting drowned ourselves. You know, it's complicated. Life is difficult and hard in these situations, and how to give people help in an appropriate way. We don't want to disempower somebody, but at the same time, we also don't want to see somebody continue to injure and hurt themselves in unnecessary ways. If there's something that we can do about it. And sometimes the closer we are to it, the more difficult it is. be brought into the community where you can be loved on, you can be prayed for, and you can be held accountable. I want to, there's great news here. And, you know, I was talking to Teresa about this yesterday. I've always had the tendency to want to preach on positive things and end in a good place. And I realize that this is kind of ending and the story is not over yet. And maybe that can be some good news for you. Maybe your story feels pretty desperate, but it's not over yet. God's still working on it. And God is still working with David. God is still working with David. I want to read in kind of a, maybe you think it's a strange way, I don't. But I want to read you something from one of my favorite movies, and it's also a book, The River Runs Through It. How many of y'all know the story, River Runs Through It? Beautiful movie. And if you know about it, it's basically about two sons, and their dad is a Presbyterian pastor. The first line of the book says this: in my family, there was no clear distinction between religion and fly fishing. And I just love that as the beginning to a book. But it's a beautiful setting, but it's a tragic story. And this one son who just had so much gifts and so much talent, but was so self-destructive in everything he did. And he ends up being killed, and he's basically a really, really bad alcoholic. And it's his family trying to help him in things along the way. And so at the very, but during the movie or in the book, you hear from the dad's sermons. And the movie kind of ends with one of his sermons. He's very old now at the end of his life. And he says this. And I give it to you as a word of comfort. He says, each one of us here today will, at one time in our lives, look upon a loved one who is in need and ask the same question. We are willing to help, Lord, but what, if anything, is needed? For it is true, we can seldom help those closest to us. Either we don't know what part of ourselves to give, or more often than not, the part we have to give is not wanted. And so, it is those we live with and should know who elude us. But we can still love them. We can love completely without complaining.